And welcome to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could join us today. We are here live in the studio on a Wednesday, and it is heating up in North Carolina. It's certainly taken a while, but we're here in the comfortable 80s. Comfortable, that is, to most people. Our AC seems to be on the fritz. But I'm very glad to be back with you all. I hope you've had a season of graduations, Mother's Days, and all kinds of things getting ready for summer. I thought today would be a great time to hit that pause button, and introduce to you a remarkable vocalist, Laura Reed. Many of you have seen and have been interacting with our social media. LauraReed.com is her website. We are thrilled that she is joining us today. Laura, welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Even before we start talking about the music, I've asked Laura to open up the show with a song. What are you going to play for us?
I'm actually going to play one of the songs off my current album, The Awakening, and this one is called Struggle. And I wrote it, I was living in Atlanta, and I was having one of those moments where I'm at the kitchen table, and I'm literally, you know, everything just was feeling hard. And I was literally about to talk myself out of my own purpose, which a lot of times we do, you know, we do it or we let other people do it. And instead of kind of giving up and feeling disempowered, all of a sudden I had this moment of clarity where I saw thousands of people around the world sitting at their kitchen table about to do the same thing. And in that moment, I almost had this sense of hope of like, oh, wow, this is just part of the story. This is just part of being human and growing. And actually, this is actually like a high moment for me right now. And in that, this whole song just kind of poured out of me. So, and I went and risked it all and moved to Nashville after that, literally within days.
So here we have it, Struggle with Laura Reed.
I have my my raspy, allergy, North Carolina voice right now. So here we go. This is Struggle.
Somebody's rent is due. Somebody feels the weather. Always got a storm passing through. Somebody got mouths to feed. Somebody got far to travel. Somebody lives in the streets. Their whole world's unraveled. Every question got an answer. Every lock has got a key. Every day's another chance for us to write our destiny. Everybody got a story. Everybody got a struggle. Everybody got worries. Everybody got troubles. Everybody got a story. Everybody got the struggle, yeah. Everybody got purpose. Got a another test, always be another trial, something to get off your chest, another road, another mile. Time turns mountains to sand, time turns sand into pearls, time waits for no one man, one man can change the world. Everybody got a story. Everybody got troubles. Everybody got the story. Everybody got a struggle, yeah. Everybody got purpose. Got a path to follow.
Amazing. That was The Struggle, sung by Laura Reed, laurareed.com. Hey, that was an amazing song
with
a story behind it.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Always. That story, you kind of led us into that story when you were at your kitchen table. Mm-hmm. You found some courage at that kitchen table.
I did. Usually you find courage when you're just about to give up. You know, you don't find courage when everything's comfortable and you don't have any adversity. You have to have those challenges, you know.
So you said to us before you played the song, you said that all of a sudden you realized you were not the only one feeling this way.
Oh, yeah. Usually what happens, and you probably, maybe you're the same way, in my lowest moments, I usually feel more connected to all of humanity because I'm like, wow, this is the human condition. Like the hardest parts of the journey are usually the best parts of the story. Like this is when we get our character. This is when you really know what you're made of and what your community is made of and what, you know, it's you need those challenges. And even though it's sometimes very hard to deal with, and some of us have more than others, but everybody has been through something. And I recognize that, you know, everybody has this unique story. It's like our thumbprint. Like no one in the world could ever have the same story as you, even if they tried. And that's a very powerful thought.
So the question that I have is why were you able to make your own lyrics? You write your own lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
So what comes first, the words or the music?
It depends. With this song, it kind of came at the same time. You know, I'll have these moments. Music is definitely a therapy for me, and it's a release. And so when I'm feeling just like I am at the brink of my emotions and whatever it is, I pick up a guitar or I sit at a piano. And for this song in particular, it was just these chords just kind of came. They're actually like bossa nova type of chords. I was listening to a lot of bossa nova music at the time. And I just kind of started playing them and humming this melody. And then the whole song just kind of struck me like lightning. And a lot of songs on The Awakening were like that. I was going through one of these turning points of my life. You know, I was in my early 20s and I had been married and was going through a divorce and had a small child and was, you know, living out in the world by myself and just so many things going on. So it was just like songs were flying out of me. And in a way, I love to give the background of them because I feel like a song is like a 3-minute script. And it's, you know, and it's almost like you want to set the scene a little bit for people to, okay, here it is. This is the stage, kitchen table, this girl feeling very, you know, hopeless. And then all of a sudden, this triumph of a song comes. And then the next song is something different. It's a different setting, you know.
All right. So we've got many songs I hope we get to listen to live, but I wanted to know something. How did you get into this music thing?
Well, originally, everyone thought I was going to be a poet. I come from a lot of writers in my family. No musicians on either side of my family. My mother's South African, but her family came to South Africa from England in World War II, kind of escaping what was going on. My grandmother lived in London, and so did my grandfather. So they were in the midst of the bombings. So they went to South Africa. It was this neutral ground, and my grandmother was a writer, and she was a journalist in South Africa. My mom's a writer. And then on my dad's side as well, there were a lot of writers, but no musicians. And then when I was about 14, I had a boyfriend that played guitar, and he left his guitar at the house, and we broke up. And I decided I was going to take my time giving it back to him. And I was getting grounded all the time in high school. And so I would get I'd have to stay in my room. That was my punishment. And so I had this guitar. And I was literally taking my poems that I've been writing since I was little. Like, I started writing poems when I was about 7. It was kind of, words were always my thing. And I would just take these poems and sing them to my guitar. And then decide to start going to coffee shops and open mics at about 15.
At 15.
Yeah.
When did you get back to the United States? Or how did that move happen?
I was 5. I remember, just if you know any of the history of South Africa, early 90s,
sure, it was
crazy. Apartheid. And of course, because there's just this power struggle, you have apartheid ending and everyone's fighting of who's going to be in charge now. Right. And we were living in Johannesburg in the middle of the city, and it was just, saw crazy things. There was a lot of violence. And my father, his family lived in North Carolina. And he was like, look, we don't have to worry about this. Like, things were happening at our house, you know, just crazy violence that you just don't want your kids to be around. So we're like, look, okay, let's move to America. My mom did not want to move. You know, we had all of our family there. It was definitely I'm sure, a lot of arguments that they had with before they decided to come here. But we moved here in North Carolina and ended up staying and brought a lot of our family from South Africa over. Like, my grandmother ended up coming and living with us, and my mom's sisters have all come over, so.
I admire these people because they seem to understand that it's really context, that it's okay to move. We're strong enough to move. We moved ourselves.
Yeah.
I moved twice, so I understand that. And it helps create the backdrop, and sadly, it helps put into perspective the good, the bad, and, you know, what keeps you sustained.
Totally.
And that comes into your words. The thing that struck me is, I want to tell our listener how we found each other.
Yes.
It was a Wednesday afternoon. Have I got this right? We were performing. We had a show and a guest had left. I was doing all the publishing. What we do, as everyone knows, we make these podcasts. So there's a little bit of technical stuff. I'm sitting in the green room on a computer and knock, knock, knock. And there's Laura. She comes in and I think you were performing at Cat's Cradle.
Yes.
Right, that evening. And so we just started talking, and you wisely, I'm so grateful, you gave me your CD. I listened to that CD 16 times.
Wow.
Within the first 2 days.
That's great.
I love the music, but the words were remarkable. I knew we were talking to a poet. Yeah. And that just changed my relationship with why I knew that your music had lift. It had something there beyond the sound. There was a message there, and it's an extremely optimistic message.
Yeah, I consider myself an optimist. You know, it's kind of glass half full or overflowing type of perspective, and I think this is a survival technique that I've acquired, you know. It's just, you can choose. Everything is a choice. Joy is a choice. You know, your perspective of the world is definitely a choice, and things are going to happen to you either way, and you can either let them go through you, or you can just keep them inside and let them fester. And so, you know, with this album, like I said, it was probably the hardest thing, some of the hardest stuff I've ever gone through, but out of it, I, you know, took my pain and turned it into pearls. You know, like, what could be an irritation or a grain of sand, we can choose to let it be a grain of sand, or we can turn it into something beautiful.
By the way, how did you know that you could do this professionally? What was that moment? Or was it one moment?
I think once I realized just how much I got out of performing and sharing songs with people and how much they got out of it, I was never really sure. I felt like I was going to be called to do a lot of things. But at about 15, 16, I knew this was my purpose. And I've had to fight. You know, of course, people have tried to convince me, you know, otherwise, even my own family, especially when I became a mother, they're like, okay, this is serious now.
The like, stage is getting really tall.
Yeah, exactly. And it pays off. You just have to just stick with it and zoom out. I'm always having to zoom out, you know. You can be very, it's easy to just get discouraged as an artist because it is up and down and it's volatile, but every industry is. And if you have a calling and a purpose, which everyone does, and you're bold enough to follow it, it's not always going to be easy. And so I've just kind of stuck with it. There's a point where I just realized this is all I can do. This is what I have to do. Like, I have to put all of my energy and invest in this and just have faith.
Let's talk a little bit about that right before I get to ask you to sing another song for us. But you said you got to have a little bit of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Faith is such an important theme in all of your lyrics.
Yeah.
But this is faith. This isn't faith necessarily spiritual faith.
No, it's not religious. I try not to be overly religious. It's more of just, to me, faith is a verb that we have to use, you know? I'm like, it's an action word. And I don't know what I would do without it. It's like I have to, you know, I have to implement it. And my mom always says that hope is not a strategy. Like, it's good to have hope, but that it's not a strategy. And faith is the same way. You have to actually implement it. But I feel like if you don't have faith, you're just going to always sell yourself short. You're going to not take the chances that you have to take. You have to take risks, you know, with love, with your career, with anything. And so for me, I'm constantly not just standing at an edge and being like, I think I might do it. I'm just constantly jumping. And just, I just know that I'm going to land. I just know it. And sometimes it doesn't happen right away. Sometimes you have to brush yourself off. But it always ends up working out.
So with that, can you play us another song?
Yeah, this one, I haven't really played it much live, and I just did a video actually in Raleigh at a venue I'm going to be playing in July. My next local show is July 8th at the Poorhouse in Raleigh.
Oh, that's a great place.
And I love, like, the owner, Adam, and his wife, Lacey, are good friends. And I've been playing there, it feels like forever. I just always want to continue playing that venue if I can. But I actually, they have this really epic alley. Like, to get into the club, you have to walk through this alley. And it felt like a bomb shelter or something to me. And I have a song called Bomb Shelter. So I asked Adam a couple weeks ago if he minded if I went and did a video. And I just started playing electric guitar live again recently. And so I had this new 96 Strat that I'm calling Ron Burgundy. And I took it into this alley and did just a solo version of Bomb Shelter. And people really dug it. So I've been playing it more live because it's more of a piano song, really. Which I have to say, I can't take full credit for this album because I wrote it and it was produced with Shannon Sanders.
Shannon Sanders. Big yes. Shout out to Shannon Sanders.
Yes.
Did a great job.
He's amazing. And background on him, he's a Nashville-based producer and writer. And he, if you're a fan of NDRE, he wrote pretty much all, a lot of her songs were his songs first. So he wrote I Am Not My Hair, Little Things, video, produced a lot of her stuff as her music director. Robert Randolph, Mark Broussard, Johnny Lang, and then so I'm in good company. So a lot of
Are they, dear?
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah. So he a lot of times will play piano with me and tour with me,
okay.
And did production on all these songs.
So here we go. We got Bomb Shelter coming up.
Yep.
Beautiful song. Wow. All right. So who is your refuge?
I don't know. I feel like a lot of people. My mom, every time that's like her favorite song I wrote.
Oh,
and she's
yeah.
like, I feel like you wrote that about God, but, you know, I don't want to put anything on your music. She's like, that's what it is for me. And I'm like, okay, it could be that. It could be another person. I think when I was writing it at the time, I was imagining whoever I was dating or seeing or, you know, just kind of being there for someone and how that's an amazing thing to have someone that's just there for you and doesn't judge and is just the shelter that you can go to.
You know, when I heard that song, I think it was, I listened to it 16 times, so that means probably around number 8. I was halfway through it. You know, I was thinking along those lines, but you know what I thought about? I thought about the refuge of our own talents.
Interesting.
And how extremely comforting it is to be able to say, I acknowledge we have these gifts, and yeah. I acknowledge that my responsibility is to bring them out. And it brought me an enormous sense of closeness to what it is you're doing.
I love that. See, that's the great thing about writing songs is it's like I can set a stage and tell you what I wrote it about or what someone else thought, but everyone has their own interpretation. And to me, that's art. You know, art is not always the painting. It's sometimes the reaction from the painting or the interpretation of the painting, and that itself is the art.
I'm so with you on this one. It's so true. You know, when we were talking about this, you mentioned that you had a baby, and now that little baby's a little 5-year-old.
He's six.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Did motherhood change the way you think about music?
Oh yeah, it changed everything.
Are you kidding?
I
didn't expect you to answer this way. Why? How?
I don't know. Being a mother has brought a lot of balance to my life. Before I had Zion, I was just touring nonstop, and I wasn't even really paying attention to just the effect on my body and my relationships, and I was just running myself ragged, and I would just give people everything. You know, I would literally just drain myself, and I didn't care. And then it's interesting. It's like you have a child, and all of a sudden, it's not about you, and you have to conserve, and you start to be really sensitive and aware of your place in the world and protection of your little one and all these things and taking care of yourself as well. And so after I had my son, I was like, you know what? I'm going to practice saying no. I'm going to make sure that things are more balanced. And I get input and not just output. And I'm not going to, you know, go across the country for nothing because I can. Like, I always have to just think things through a little bit more. So it did affect my career. I've been more careful. And I was very lucky that soon after I had him, I got my first publishing deal, which kind of set me up to be at home more and be a mom. You know, I was still in the studio, but I would just bring him with me. But it definitely, you know, it's hard not to be affected. I feel like I'm a different person since I gave birth.
Would you be able to explain something? We do so many radio shows here talking to artists, talking to people who write books, people who publish books. We talk about small businesses. We talk about entrepreneurs. We really cover a lot of Courage Cocktail Brews.
Love
but we're very lucky. But I don't understand something you said, which was you got your first publishing deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does that mean to the uneducated? Does that mean that you're contracted to do something on a set day? Is it like writing a book?
No, I mean, and there's a bunch of different, you know, deals that you can get. What I got, you know, I moved to Nashville and was there for probably about 6 or 7 months before I had an opportunity to perform for the head of EMI, which is one of the biggest publishing companies in the world. But 2 weeks after I ended up signing with them, I played Struggle. And the president, Ben Vaughn, was like, that song, he's like, it's special. We need you. Like, but he was like, we want you to write your songs. And this to be instead of you writing for other people, maybe you will, but like you are an artist. And he's like, we want to get behind you. Well, within 2 weeks, Sony ended up buying EMI. So within any time one business, one company buys another and absorbs it, you can get lost in the fray.
Consolidation crushes.
Yeah. So the guy who ended up signing me, of course, he lost his job, and they kept the Sony president, and I kind of got lost in the mix, but I stayed there. They let go of a lot of writers, but I spent 2 years working on this record, and so I was just writing and demoing, and then we were pushing my songs for licensing in film and TV. So I had a couple, you know, there's a couple different TV shows that use my music, a couple different movies that use the
music. Can you name them?
Yeah, VH1 has a song called Hollywood Exes. They used Wake Up.
Yeah.
A&E used a song I wrote, co-wrote called Southern Fried with my friend Alex King. Alicia Keys was actually doing the scoring for a movie called Inevitable Defeat of Mr. and Pete, and she used Wake Up as well. There's a movie with Dakota Johnson from 50 Shades of Grey called Chloe and Theo.
Oh, I've heard about it.
Yeah, and they used my song Faith Not Fear.
So. I love that one. Mm-hmm. I love that one. Yeah. I hope we get to play that later on.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was an interesting situation. I know some songwriters, especially in Nashville, it's like you have a quota of songs you have to turn in every month. Mm-hmm. And you're really just trying to get other artists to pick up your songs. And, you know, I was okay. I was into that if somebody wanted to cut one. But I was really just focusing on writing as many songs as I could and collaborating and co-writing and building this catalog of music. And so that was kind of my publishing deal, was build this catalog of music and then let's try and like leverage it or do something with it. And, you know, I, like I said, I was kind of caught in between this transition from of EMI to Sony. So I was technically an EMI artist, but I was with an EMI deal, but under Sony. So they didn't really know what to do with me, and I didn't do country music. I was in Nashville, and they were just like, we don't really know what to do with you. Because you're not doing country music, but maybe Carrie Underwood would do one of those songs. That she might like that song over there. And I'm just kind of like, all right, well, I just kind of didn't even pay any attention. I was just keeping my head down, working with Shannon, working with a couple other different writers, and trying to get as much out of it as I could.
Well, you know, we're going to go for a little break. But when we get back, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about that industry, why Nashville. I mm-hmm. think you're a soul pop singer. I think mm-hmm. that's the world. Maybe you're kind of in that in-between zone. Yeah. But right now, we're going to go out for a little break and play a song, a cut from the album. Which one did you recommend?
Wake Up.
Wake Up and listen to this.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio show? How about an interest in engineering or a computer background? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. To find out more, please visit our website, WCOMFM.org. To make a financial contribution, sponsor your favorite show, or help support our many featured news and information programs, click the PayPal donate button at the top of our main page. Again, please visit our website, WCOMFM.org, and thanks for listening to your community radio station.
And welcome back to Garage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. We are broadcasting live from the studios of WCOM LPFM in the heart of Carrboro, North Carolina. Joining us live in the studio is the artist Laura Reed, the vocalist, the lyricist. You do it all. And in case you missed the first half of the show, we were singing. Laura performed two songs for us from her album, The Awakening. You can learn more about her work and her upcoming gigs at laurareed.com, R-E-E-D.com, Laura Reed. And one of the songs, one of the words that I heard, a phrase in that last song, was called Joy is a Choice. And I hear this lyrics, and we picked it up. We were talking about your journey, but you were talking about Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
But can you tell us a little bit, what's Nashville? Is it a southern city? How does it feel?
Well, it's a southern city, but it's definitely music city. You know, there's a couple places in the world where everywhere you go, and I don't even know there are a couple places. I know that for Nashville, definitely, everywhere you go, someone's tied into music. You know, you go to get, I remember the first week I lived there, I went to get pizza and started talking to the guy who delivered the pizza, and he was telling me how he wrote most of Leanne Rimes' big hits, and I'm like, oh, sure, and then I went and looked him up, and I'm sure enough, he was, and then now he has a pizzeria, and it's just one of those places where if you want to really focus on being a writer, you can really, like, hone in on that. It's got some of the best songwriters in the world, and that's part of why I wanted to be there. My father's actually from there, and his family's been there. My great-great-great-grandfathers are from Nashville.
Really?
So
were they all in the music industry?
No, not at all.
Wow.
They were actually very blue-collar, sharecroppers out in the hills of Tennessee, and then they had a framing business called Reed's Framing in Madison, Tennessee, and I went and visited it. It's closed down now, but you saw, like, the old vintage sign from the 40s. And funny enough, my cousin still is keeping it going, and they do all the framing for BMI and ASCAP, which are the big publishing companies.
Sure.
All the frames of all the gold records at all the buildings there, my family's been doing for at least 100 years.
Well, I can't wait till they start framing their cousins'
records. I know. I was like, just, cousin, you better have some good frames ready for me. So it's funny, though, because I never thought I would ever end up in Nashville, because I've always considered myself more R&B, soul, pop. I was living in Atlanta, and I remember the first time I visited Nashville to go and have some meetings, I was just like, these guys don't get me. You know, like, I was like, this would never be a place for me to create. You know, I just don't feel at home here. And I went back to Atlanta, and then I played a wedding at the Four Seasons. It was this wedding, and it was kind of a high-profile music industry wedding. Mm-hmm. And I don't do a lot of covers. So at this wedding, I did all original music. And there's this guy, Paul Worley, happened to be the audience at this wedding. And Paul is known for being the producer for Dixie Chicks. He did all the Dixie Chicks albums, Lady Antebellum, the band Perry, Sarah Evans. I mean, he discovered them, developed them, produced them.
And he was in there at the wedding.
He was at the wedding. Well, after the show, he came up to me and was like, hi, my name's Paul Worley, and I would give my right arm to work with you. And I'm like, who is this old man? Like, I don't know who. Didn't know who he was.
You never judge a book by a cover.
I totally blew him off. And then he went and got the groom and was like, can you introduce me to the singer? She just won't talk to me. And he was like, look, forget everyone else at this wedding. Go quickly to the bathroom. Google that guy. And I did. And I was like, oh, my goodness. I felt so rude. Went back. And we talked for hours.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, look, I'd love to work with you. He's like, you got this unique voice and this message. And anyway, it took a couple years for it actually to come to fruition, because I had been in this production deal with a studio in Atlanta that wouldn't let me work with any other producers, which that's a whole nother conversation. You know, it's one of these things I had to get out of when I was in Atlanta. But once I decided to get out of that situation, the first person I called was Paul Worley. Now, I hadn't talked to Paul in about 3 years, because these people had told him, Laura's not interested in working with you. She has a producer. And they told me, Paul's not interested in working with you. So I was just like, well, he seemed really interested. That's strange. I mean, he was going to give me his right arm. And so I just had this gut feeling to call him, not even sure if he'd remember me. He picks up the phone immediately and was like, Laura Reed. And we had this whole conversation. I told him everything. I was like, look, my marriage isn't working out. You know, I have this little boy and all this stuff is, because when I first met him, I didn't. And I was told him my whole story since the last time I saw him. And he was like, well, how soon can you be in Nashville? Because he's like, I can't help you in Atlanta. I can help you in Nashville. And I had my friend at my house. And she goes, I'll watch Zion. Go tomorrow. And I'm like, okay, tomorrow morning. So I got a hotel. I brought my friend and my son. Nice. And because, you know, that was literally my support system at the time. I was living away from my family. I didn't have them like I do here in North Carolina. We go to Nashville and I meet him at Warner Chappell Studios and he's mixing the song I Need You Now with Lady Antebellum, which ends up being this huge, massive hit. So I go in there, I meet all of them, and Paul's like telling them, this is this girl right here. You guys got to listen to her. And I had my little demo I had made in Atlanta and I played it for him. And he was like, look, you just need to be in Nashville. It's going to be really good for you. He's like, I need to check with my wife, but I'm pretty sure that you can come and stay at my house. And sure enough, I lived at his house for 6 months with him and his family.
Oh, wow.
And kind of started getting my roots in Nashville. And he introduced me to Shannon and to all these different people and great writers. And it changed my life. And I felt like I was always writing, but I didn't really become a songwriter. And so I moved to Nashville. It kind of took all this raw wood that I had and polished it. I started learning about, you know, just like I said, the song being a script, like getting to the point, like really making sure that the message is not, no one has to search for it. It needs to be really obvious. And so I learned a lot while I was there.
This thing about writing, we talk so much about writers, but one thing I noticed is that the words arrive before their meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a signature of truly thoughtful lyricist, librettist, whatever you want to call yourself, mm-hmm. songwriter. And it's something deep enough so that when you walk away, it's not this puff piece.
Yeah.
You say, oh my gosh, I never realized it could mean that too.
Yeah.
And this curiosity starts kind of unfolding.
Yeah, which, like, and I'm proud of the music I made before. You know, I have two other albums before this that are with my old band, Laura Reed and Deep Pocket. But that was very much about a groove. We were super a live band. It was my college band, and we were doing like 20-something shows a month for a couple of years.
You were in college doing this?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't really stop, you know, all through high school I was doing shows. College I was doing shows. I still graduated, and I have a degree, but I barely even made it to my graduation because I was doing a show in Charleston the night before and literally, like, rolled out of the Sprinter van and had to run into the graduation ceremony while the band's waiting for me outside. But, yeah, it's just I went from having these songs that were, like, 7 minute and they were all about a groove and a beat and a feeling mm-hmm. to, okay, that's important, and you're going to have that at the live show. But on the album and as far as the song, it has to be a message. It has to be something really concise that people can take and it can affect them, you know?
And they can listen to it 16 times the first mm-hmm. time they get their hands on it and exactly. want to listen to it.
Yeah, exactly. So
I had no idea. We definitely need to listen to some more music. Would you be up for another song?
Sure.
I'd like to maybe pick a song about something that one of the surprises that you've had. Sounds like you've had many surprises.
Okay. I'll write one about a single one called Wolves that's on that album. And Wolves I wrote kind of about, there's been a lot of situations, and anyone that's an artist or a musician, probably even just anybody in general, has had those experiences where you really trust people and you think that they have your best intentions and they're looking out for you. But you have always had this gut feeling that maybe they aren't. Because sometimes there's wolves in sheep's clothing, and then sometimes there's wolves in wolves' clothing. Like, you already know what it is you're getting yourself
those
into.
Those are my favorite people, frankly.
Yeah, which...
they're in your face.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's what this song is about. Folks are like shadows, stand in your light and disappear. Some folks are so shallow, see what they want to see, hear what they want to hear. Some folks are so envious, crabs in a bucket wanna bring it down. They make it so hard to trust, question intentions when they come around. Always there when you least expect to destroy what you respect. Oh, wolves, wolves in sheep's clothing, clothing.
think you're fooling, ha, fooling. Trying to pull the wool over my eyes, but I see through this disguise. Don't use the word family casually. Live 100 with sincerity. Don't rearrange words maliciously. Speak with truth and clarity. Always there when you least expect to destroy what you respect. Oh, wolves, wolves and she's clothing, clothing. Who you think you're fooling, fooling. Try to pull the wool over my eyes, but I see through this disguise. You may pull the wool over some man's eyes, but you can't fool me, no you can't fool me. You may pull the wool over some man's eyes, but you can't fool me, no you can't fool me. You may pull the wool over some man's eyes, but you can't fool me, no you can't fool me. You're wolves, wolves and she's clothing, clothing. Who you think you're fooling, fooling. Trying to pull the wool over my eyes, but I see through this disguise.
You heard it. Wolves by Laura Reed, the great Laura Reed, performing live here at WCOMLPFM. So you beat that one because you wrote that song, Protecting Yourself.
In a way. Yeah, it was, like I said, you know, music is this therapy, and I had these people around me that I feel like were, it was almost like they were trying to discourage me. They were supposed to be the ones kind of curating my career, but instead they were making me doubt myself and making me, they wanted me to change myself, change my music, all these things. What you hear, this is that classic music story, you know, and maybe I would have had more fame or some kind of grander, flashier success earlier on if I had listened to these people and just totally shelved my integrity. But I refused to, because that wasn't what my purpose was, you know. It was toxic. It was this toxic relationship. And they almost convinced me to quit. They almost convinced me that I wasn't good enough or all these things. And instead of being defeated, I was like, I'm going to write a song about this.
Your superpowers.
And then no, as soon as you write the song, then it's out. The poison's out. You know, it can't stay once you put it into words. For me, once you sing it, it can't touch you anymore.
Where are you going next? What's on the horizon here? You've taken us through this journey.
Well, right now it's like I'm in a very comfortable place. It's funny because
really?
I feel like, especially during the awakening, if you listen to it, you can just tell it's like this journey and this struggle and finding myself. And now I'm working on my next album, and everyone that listens to it says, wow, like this is like just very confident and you're just comfortable. I'm comfortable in my stride. And I feel like now I have a career. Like I don't question if this is what I'm going to do or is it going to be successful or what's going to happen. I just know. And it's more just like, okay, be strategic. What is it that you want to do? Make that happen. Who is it that you want to work with? What do you want to write about? And just kind of curating this career. But that's kind of where I'm at now, making another album and, you know, growing a fan base, making sure that I stay in touch and give energy and receive energy from the people that have already been supporting me, because I have amazing fans and supporters that have been loyally following me, some of them since I was, you know, in high school. There's still people coming out and supporting that have been doing it since I was 15 years old. And I can tell you that was quite a long time ago. So, you know.
Not that long ago.
Not that long ago, but long enough where I was just like, you know, that I feel very grateful. Uh-huh. And so that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm touring. I'm doing a lot of, you know, solo shows. I have a lot of great musicians around me and just working on new music.
So does the South shape your music?
I think so. I think, I know so actually, because I've very much been influenced by jazz and by blues, by Motown soul, but by Memphis soul. You know, my dad and my mom, they weren't musicians, but they listened to great music. So, you know, I was always listening to this really classic Stax Records. And, you know, my dad loved Otis Redding and James Brown and Ray Charles. And then my mom, she had a lot of the British music that came to South Africa. So she's obsessed with Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd. So we would like, you know, I had all this music around me and all these folk singers. And then there was also the African element, which finds its way into my music.
The rhythms.
Yeah, the rhythms.
In the rhythm. These are not American rhythms. You say there's something else going on. I can hear it.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, until I was five, most of the music I was hearing was like Afropop, like Miriam Makeba and Brenda Fassie and, you know, township music and all of that. And the singing I was hearing, I was, you know, around Zulu and Xhosa people all the time. And that was my early influence and introduction to music. Then I moved to the South and I fall in love with Muddy Waters and Aretha Franklin and all this other stuff.
So. I hear, you know, that strong voice, mm-hmm. that standing on my own two feet voice, mm-hmm. it's there. It's almost as if you can't stop it from coming out.
I have to pull back a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but if that's what your producer said.
Yeah, it's, well, part of my history of doing music is I was a street performer. I busked. So I went to New Orleans and would sing on the street all the time in the mountains of North Carolina and Boone, New York. And so I think I've gotten this big voice from that. It was like stop people in their tracks. And it was this projection. So I was doing that at like 16, 17. I left home at 17 and started traveling around and singing on the street and singing wherever I could.
Did you kind of stay in touch with the folks?
Yeah, I did. I did. Uh-huh. They just knew, they're like, she's wild. She's going to do this whether we want to or not.
Then what brought you back to the college? How did you manage that?
Well... I wasn't sure if I was going to go to school, and then I had an experience where I saw somebody OD on drugs while I was traveling around in New York, and it freaked me out, and I literally got on a bus and left and lost all communication with the people that I was around and decided I wanted to go to school, and I contacted the principal at my high school, mm-hmm. and we got along very well. Like, he just really loved me and felt like I was an original thinker and all these things. And he was like, it's a waste if you don't. And I'm like, look, it's kind of late. I don't know if I'm just going to be able to get in, but can we try? And he was like, yeah. I don't know what he did. He wrote some letter of recommendation, but I ended up getting in super last minute to ASU and ended up graduating in 3.5 years. So I graduated before, like, a lot of the people that I went in there with while still doing music. And ended up being in the Honors College at Watauga, and did the I was a sustainable development major through anthropology, the whole anthropology program they have there. Not music at all, not music related.
And why this is so significant is that, you know, I think that at the end of the day, our music is our art, but when you start learning and start being in, you know, surrounded by other thinking people, it just kind of, it's osmosis. You can change the way they think, they can change the way you think, they make you stronger. It's an amazing story. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I'm glad that principal stood up to the plate.
Oh, yeah. Brother Gary, wherever you are, thank you very much.
Okay, Brother Gary. Brother Gary. You certainly do know how to support talent. Mm-hmm. You're going to be performing. You said in D.C. is your next performance?
Yes. I'm singing with kind of this Brazilian side project on the 3rd of June in Atlanta for the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival. Okay. But that's not under Laura Reed. It's called Zapodurat, which is a Brazilian percussionist and then a bass player and a guitarist. And then I sing in Portuguese. So I'll be doing that on the...
Do you speak Portuguese?
Yep.
How did you speak Portuguese?
My ex-husband was Brazilian, and he hardly spoke any English when I met him.
Well,
so I learned Portuguese.
It.
Yeah.
Wow. So you must have a whole followers in Brazil. And...
Yeah, I've done quite a few shows with the Berklee School of Music in Brazil and Sao Paulo, and I've written a lot of songs in Portuguese.
Beautiful.
I speak both languages to my son. He has dual citizenship.
Nifty. So you've got this thing going on. You've got a concert coming up on July 8th at the Poorhouse.
Yeah, July 8th, the Poorhouse. The next Laura Reed show is June 4th in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
At the Rock and Roll Hotel. And then after that, I'll be playing in York, South Carolina, which is just outside of Charlotte, at the Sylvia Theater. It's this beautiful old theater, and I'm going to be actually doing an acoustic solo show.
Really?
So it'll be a very intimate show in a whole theater.
What day is that going to be?
That's June 17th.
Okay, June 17th. So
it's
got
not
this
too far.
Lineup.
Yeah. And then I'm doing Summerfest in Milwaukee.
What? Now, Summerfest, that's a huge show.
Yes, that's going to probably be my biggest show. I mean, it's about 500,000 people attend that. They
that's
close
tremendous.
The city down. And so I'm part of the Emerging Artist Series. So I'll be playing on Thursday, June 30th. And then I do another show in Marshfield, Wisconsin. On the Saturday, so kind of random, doing like a little Midwestern run, and then come back to Raleigh.
When is that next album coming out so that we know?
The album, the whole album, we're still kind of writing and recording. That's probably not due until the fall. Okay. However, I'm going to be releasing a single called Lately, and we're pushing for end of June. I want to have that out by Summerfest.
What's that about?
That one, Lately, let's see. It's kind of a relationship song.
Ah.
Yeah, which I don't do a lot of those, but it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek, but also very serious about once a relationship, when you kind of start becoming, you know, you grow apart and you find that you're just kind of like someone's, all of a sudden you find yourself being their mom. You're just kind of cleaning up after them and you're not valued anymore. And then, so the beginning of the song is kind of talking about that. Like, man, I'm working and I'm giving you everything and I'm not feeling appreciated. And then the second verse is like reminiscing, like, what about when we used to drive around together? You know, kind of this like nostalgia for what a relationship was or could be. And so it's kind of one of those type of songs. It's just fun.
It's a fun song.
It's a fun song, but also probably very real. Like I've been playing it out live for about 2 years and people love it. And so we're like, look, we need to do this as a single. So.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for coming with us and joining us at this
community
radio station, WCOM, LPFM. I also want to make sure that our listeners know, have a simple way of following you. In addition to the website, laurareed.com, do you have social media?
Yes, I'm very big on social media.
Right.
We can social mediate. I'm Twitter and Instagram, I'm _ Laura Reed, R-E-E-D. Facebook, Laura Reed Music. Okay. YouTube, Laura Reed Music. SoundCloud, Laura Reed Music.
So, SoundCloud is what I've been playing on our Facebook pages and getting a lot of responses.
Yeah, so there's, and you know, there's music on iTunes, I'm on Spotify and Pandora and Tidal and all that stuff. So you can find the music that way, or you can just Google me and you'll find a ton of different ways to stay in touch.
There's so many things going on, so many ways that we can listen to music, but the hardest part is curating it. So I am so grateful that fortuitously you walked into the studio and said, here I am, what are you going to do for me?
Yeah, it was, I believe there's no mistakes or coincidences, and thank you for being so gracious and
we were blessed
supporting and having me on the show.
I'm glad we were able to talk about as many things as we were. It's rare to have our format. We have an unusual format.
Yeah.
We don't have a 17 and a half minute gig. We go very specifically to what's the story we want to learn and how can we learn from you? So I'm thrilled that you were here. I want to do a shout out. This is the part of the story that I get to say. Shout out to Bill, who's been our soundboard engineer. Great job.
Thank you, Bill.
Shout out to Carol McClymont, the grandmother, my mother-in-law, who joined us in studio listening to some great music. And I also want to thank our underwriters, which are North Carolina State University. Mm-hmm. We are part of a grant that was for the advancement of women entrepreneurs.
Ooh, I love that.
Isn't that great? So many of your songs could be the soundtrack for women entrepreneurs. I'll be sure to pass that on to friends. Laura, is there any way I could beg you to take us out with a song?
Sure. How about, I should do one of my songs, or if I should do a song that I was influenced by.
Whatever.
Well, I was telling you, you know, I moved to North Carolina and I fell in love with American music.
Yes.
And I was very much influenced by the blues. And so there's a song that I've been playing for forever. It's a Robert Johnson song, but I do the Elmore James version of it. So this is Dust My Broom. I believe.
Wow. You listen to her here. Laura Reed, incomparable vocalist. Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
All righty. And thank you, listener, for joining us on Courage Cocktail Radio Show, where you bring the lunch and I'll bring the Courage Cocktail. I'll be here next week. Thanks.